Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are off and rolling. Thursday, September 4, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn, on @G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer of the show. That would be Connor Dunning on @CDunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man? I'm fired up.
You're fired up.
I'm fired up. We have a great show, loaded show.
Yep.
Ryan Silverfield's on today. We got Kyron on today. Then, after people listen to the show, you can listen to the show on the way to General Knowledge Trivia, 7 o'clock, Hampline.
And what's going to be playing on the TV?
Oh, NFL football.
Yeah.
We got NFL football
yeah.
tonight. But do you know what I'm also doing tonight? I'm seeing Jaws on the big screen at Malco.
After you host trivia?
Oh, yeah. Late night showing. The final showing of the 50th anniversary. Jaws on the big screen for my first time. I've never
okay.
seen it on the big screen.
All right. So when will you be done with that? That's like it'll be like midnight.
Probably like 11:30.
Okay.
Midnight.
All right. The lengths you go to watch your movies. I mean.
Hey, when you get a chance to see Jaws on a big screen, you do it.
I hear you. Now, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open here. There was an interesting conversation had today on ESPN about generational talents at the quarterback position. It was related to Arch Manning, but Ryan Clark had a take that I want to just sort through real quick. Also, Arkansas and Memphis, that series has been changed. Hunter Yurecek has moved the 2026 game that was supposed to be in Fayetteville because of the 9-game SEC schedule, moved it to 2030. We'll talk about if that game will actually be played, but it's worth discussing. We still have the fallout of Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers and the potential subverting of the salary cap in the NBA. The latest there is that the Clippers have put out a statement, and I will read that statement, we'll react to it. And then, of course, we have the season opener tonight, Eagles versus Cowboys. Can I ask you this before we really break it down? Do you expect any funny business tonight? With week one, everybody's down on the Cowboys, ring night for the Eagles. Like, is there any thought in your mind that the Cowboys can stick in this game?
I think they might stick in it. I think the Eagles are going to win it.
Right.
The Cowboys offense, I still think, has potential to be interesting because they're just going to be throwing the ball. They're going to throw the ball like crazy.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to imagine. The Eagles' talent is just so vast at this point. And in the draft, they added Jahad Campbell. And if you've read any reports about Jahad Campbell out of Alabama and what he's been able to do so far in an Eagles uniform, they've added to a defense that was already stout and good. I mean, and now they still have young players that are growing into themselves. Jalen Carter, I expect to be better. Nolan Smith, I expect to be better. So, I mean, this is...
I feel like we do this every offseason with
me,
the Eagles.
I know that NFL football, it's any given Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, I get that part of it, and Monday. I get that is part of it. And these are all professionals, and things happen. But that Eagles roster is just so good.
Yeah, they're loaded.
So, so good. And I think they could potentially repeat. You know my pick. It's the Ravens, but I think they could potentially repeat. As far as guests are concerned, Connor already teased it for me and teed it up. 4:30, coming up bottom half of this hour, Kyron Samuels will join. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins. And then 6 o'clock, per normal on a Thursday now. Make sure you tune in for that. Ryan Silverfield, head coach of the Memphis football team, will join. We'll get some injury updates on C.J. Smith and Greg DeRosier Jr. I want to talk about the Chattanooga game, then we'll look ahead to Georgia State. Did you see the addition Georgia State made recently?
I did not.
T.J. Finley, who was supposed to be the quarterback at Tulane, 6'7", been in college for 6 years. Apparently, he's been on campus, from what I've heard, for about 6 weeks now, so he's had a chance to learn some of the offense. And the coach at Georgia State says that it's very possible T.J. Finley plays in this game. So that throws the Tigers for a bit of a loop, doesn't it? Not having him on film, having to go study other film from other teams to see what he does well. He's got a live arm. He's fast. He's athletic, big, strong. So that could pose a challenge for the Tigers coming up on Saturday. But Ryan will join at 6. All right. First and foremost, last night was the 92.9 ESPN Fantasy League draft. How do you feel like you did, Connor? How do you feel like you did?
I think I did pretty well.
ESPN graded us out. So you feel like you did well?
I think I did well. I looked at the projections and I looked at our grades.
You were third, I was fifth.
I was third, you were fifth. I will say, only show with two top five projections. Not surprised, but you know, needs to be pointed out. I like my team. I ended up going Bijan number two.
Yep.
Over Saquon. I also considered Gibbs late though, because Gibbs could have a huge season and jump to that number one running back. Very possible that could happen.
Still David Montgomery in that running back room, so you have to be safe.
I decided to go with Bijan. I feel happy. Having a 12-team league and the number two pick is difficult, but I feel like I took the best talent that was available to me every single time. There's only like one pick I didn't absolutely love that I took, and it was Javonte Williams, but I was kind of stuck because running back depth was completely disappearing, so I kind of had to take a reach there. But then I decided to stash Joe Mixon, which kind of offset, I think, the penalty of Javonte Williams. If Mixon
comes
back,
reports that he may not play at all this year, whatever.
So,
it's a stash.
So yeah, he's just okay. Yeah, so I don't expect. Did you think I was going to start him week one? I don't expect to have Joe Mixon. If he comes back midseason, that could be a bump. But overall, I feel like I talked a bit to our commissioner, Ben Hogan, about it through text last night. My team feels like one that's going to be in the playoff hunt, and then if someone like Tyreek Hill turns back the clock, I'll get dangerous.
Although vibes may be high with the Miami Dolphins. We'll talk about it in the
because my running backs are great. I mean, Bijan and Kyren Williams, super happy with that. Then I got Tyreek and McMillan, who might have a big season with Bryce Young. Bryce Young's looked pretty good in his last few games. So I'm hopeful. I got Laporta, got a good tight end, good defense. Jake Elliott's on my team.
There you go.
Vibes are high.
Yeah. So here's how we grade it out. Brad Carson, our fearless leader, A.
Great draft.
John Mills, A. Gabe Kuhn, A. You, Jessica Benson, George Ruggiero, new to the league, B's, and then way at the bottom, who I play week one. I play him week one. Jason Smith.
Oh, man.
He graded out as a D.
Jess had a great draft. She was drafting
right
before me.
She won the league last year. But Jason Smith, our guy, a D. And I looked at his roster, who I play week one. 5 rookies, 3 second-year players. Starting quarterback, Drake May.
High ceiling, low floor?
He's drafting for the future, I think. He's planning for the future. I don't know. he went with a lot of unproven talent. I don't know what to think about that. All right, now, I know people are tired of hearing about our fantasy league, so let's go ahead and get to what I heard today on ESPN. There's a conversation about Arch Manning, Dan Orlovsky, Stephen A. Smith, and Ryan Clark were having it. And the question was posed, is he a generational talent? And obviously Stephen A. and Ryan Clark pushed back and said he was not. Dan Orlovsky had his take, which I do not necessarily agree with, that he said he is. He's got that name. He's big. He's strong. Good arm talent. Let's just wait and see what he becomes. Don't judge him off that one game against Ohio State. But Ryan Clark took it a step further. Here's what he had to say about being a generational talent. I agree wholeheartedly with Stephen A.
Very well stated point.
Now, to answer the question that they posed, is Arch Manning a generational talent? No. You reserve that for guys coming into the NFL draft most of the time that you know are going to pop day one. Andrew Luck is one of those guys.
Cam Newton.
Cam Newton's one of those guys. You look at guys like that. That's who you look for Joe Burrow threw for 5,000 yards at LSU, set the single season passing record there. Like, that's
Lamar Jackson.
Well, he was picked 29th. I don't know if people were talking about him at the quarterback position quite like that. Remember, they thought he was a running back. So I don't know if they were talking about him like that.
Did.
But he, within his answer, Ryan Clark said, Drew Brees isn't a generational talent, and Tom Brady he didn't consider a generational talent. All right, so this is all semantics. I understand that. But I think his definition of generational talent has to do with physical attributes. How hard do you throw the ball? How far do you throw the ball? What's your accuracy look like? What's your stature? How athletic are you? And I get that to a certain extent, right? Like, I understand where you sort of put generational talent into that type of realm. Now, what I would say to Ryan Clark is, if that's the realm you're going with, is Jamarcus Russell generational talent? Anthony Richardson, is he a generational talent? Justin Fields, with his athleticism, his arm coming out of Ohio State, was he a generational talent? I think my biggest take here, Connor, is that we are able to, after the fact, tab someone a generational talent, and that's okay. Tom Brady won 7 Super Bowls in 19 years. Won it with 2 different teams. He was a generational talent. Regardless of if he was picked in the 6th round, 5th round, 3rd round, it doesn't matter what he looked like coming out of the NFL draft into the NFL. In the end of the day, I feel like we reduce this conversation into physical attributes, arm talent, things like that. We can pretty confidently say, after their illustrious careers, Drew Brees and Tom Brady are generational talents. Did it always look that way? No. But I think we need to normalize being able to go back after the fact and say those guys were generational talents, even though we didn't necessarily project them to be. Just reducing it to NFL draft projections, athleticism, size, that is so reductionist, it's not even funny.
Yes, real quick. I'm a big believer in the jinx, so I must say this. I think Jason Smith might have a good season in our fantasy football.
Okay, rock on.
I'm gonna shoot him some bail there. When it comes to this conversation specifically, the first thing that stood out to me was Peyton Manning was a generational talent. Everybody always thought he was. Yep. So just take him out of this conversation. I don't understand why he used him as an example. Everybody knew that Peyton Manning was going to be a successful NFL quarterback. Yes, he threw a lot of interceptions his rookie season, but he was allowed to throw those interceptions because everybody knew this is a generational talent that you have at quarterback, and there's no way in hell this guy's going to miss. There was no doubt about it that the Colts found their franchise quarterback for the foreseeable future, and it wasn't a shock to anybody that he became one of the all-time great quarterbacks. So, yes, Peyton Manning, generational talent. I understand what he's trying to say here, and I think that you did a good job of explaining it. I do think, though, Drew Brees and Tom Brady, most notably Tom Brady, was a generational talent. It just wasn't with physical attributes.
Right.
It was with his brain.
And I think
it was with his intelligence.
But here's the thing about the quarterback position.
It's the most important thing. Like, if you dropped Tom Brady's brain into Justin Fields,
Anthony Richardson's head.
Or, yeah. Oh my God.
The best player ever.
Or Jamarcus Russell with that arm. Like, it would look a lot different for those types of players. It's like it bothers me that he was only looking at physical attributes.
Right.
Because I understand that point that he's trying to make. And yes, sometimes you see a quarterback that has it all and they also have the physical attributes. I thought his example of Andrew Luck was right on
Perfect.
The money. That made all the sense in the world. But Tom Brady was a generational talent. You just couldn't see it when you were looking
right.
at him because it's his intelligence. It's his IQ. It's how he ran the Patriots.
Shouldn't
it's how
that
he
be
ran
considered
the
talent? Shouldn't
yes.
that, you
and
know I, what I mean? Like,
I also think that Drew Brees had the physical attributes too. The guy had a cannon for such a little guy.
It wasn't crazy, but his accuracy was just
that's
on
what,
point.
He had a cannon. And he threw a bullet at
well,
people.
And his understanding of the game is what separated him. And again, like, that needs to be considered part of this generational talent conversation.
Right.
I look at a guy like Garrett Nussmeier at LSU. I don't think he's the tallest or the strongest or the most athletic, but I thought he had the best quarterback performance of week 1 of the college football season because of how he analyzed the game, delivered the football, and found ways to help his team win. And I know it was ugly, but they got into this drag of a game against Clemson, and he handled business using his brain, sliding protections, understanding when he's hot, scanning the field, finding open guys, knowing his pre-snap reads, knowing his post-snap reads. That is part of talent as well. Just reducing it to this physical attribute conversation completely defeats the purpose of talking football. We're supposed to educate. We're supposed to help people along and help them sort of decipher who's great, who's not. And to leave out the mental capacity of quarterbacks when it comes to the talent conversation, it reduces it to nothing. It reduces that conversation.
Sometimes it can be bothersome when quarterbacks get placed into certain buckets. Like Cam Newton, for example. Like, he never got enough credit about how smart he was out there on the football field. How he ran the team, always making the right decision.
How well he threw the ball before the shoulder injury.
Yeah, I think that goes under talked about, under discussed. And that's where, like, Cam Newton to me was a generational talent because he had the intelligence and he had the physical attributes at the exact same time. So he was a bona fide generational talent. All of this ties into, though, the conversation that you and I were having before week one even happened, where we thought the conversations about Arch Manning were silly anyway. Because why are we doing this? Why are we calling him a generational talent? Why are we expecting him to win a Heisman? Why are we saying that it's championship or bust? None of that stuff made sense because we didn't have the evidence of it. We didn't have the evidence of him being a generational talent. He has potential to be a very good college quarterback and a really good NFL quarterback. The potential is there. But you're telling me that kid is a generational talent? No, he's not. He's not a generational talent.
I've seen guys with the physical stature and athleticism of Arch Manning.
Yes.
Before. It's all going to be for him about neck up, like it is for all quarterbacks, but we don't term the guys who are great from the neck up generational talents because they don't have these physical attributes. It's reductionist.
I think that Stephen A. Smith actually made a really good point. He was like, is the important word in that sentence. He isn't right now. Could he develop into one?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
You can become one, but right now he is not.
Yeah.
He is not. And I think the example of Peyton Manning was a bit silly, and I think that he was underselling Drew Brees and Tom Brady some of their ability.
Yeah, and it's just kind of funny that Stephen A. seemed to be the most level-headed in that entire conversation.
I couldn't believe it.
Dan O. saying, yes, Arch is a generational talent. Ryan Clark saying he's not, which I agree with, but then saying Peyton, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees weren't.
Do you think that Dan Orlovsky was about to say that he is a generational talent?
Yeah.
I was interested in what point he was about to make that got cut off.
Yeah.
Because I think that he was going to talk about how you can develop into one, and I think he was going to go neck up with some of the examples there. So, to be honest, I think that Stephen A. made a good point. I do wish that Orlovsky would have been able to finish what he was saying because I don't think I watched it and listened to it and said, oh, he believes Arch is. I think he thinks Arch could be.
Yeah.
But he's certainly not right now, and anybody arguing he is putting an unfair expectation on his shoulders.
We watched game one. A generational talent would be able to win that game. And
does college football have a generational talent right now?
I don't know.
Because sometimes you don't.
We'll see. Let's let the season play out. I think that's the other part of this. Let's not we overreact and embellish because we have a lead up to games every weekend. It's too much. It really is. All right, now, speaking of games, Memphis, of course, plays Arkansas at home in week four of this season. But the return trip to Fayetteville has been postponed. It's been postponed, according to Arkansas AD Hunter Yurecek. Memphis's game at Arkansas is moving from 2026 to 2030. Obviously, Arkansas needed to cut a non-conference game to clear the way for 9 SEC games in 2026 because the SEC made that switch. Memphis obviously has an empty spot on next year's schedule. But what comes to my mind first is I believe it was in September of 2024 when Hunter Yurecek was made privy to the situation at Memphis with the stadium and the home game coming up this season. He said, we'd be willing to swap home games. We'd be willing to do that. I'm totally open to that because you're not maximizing what you could potentially get into the Liberty Bowl with Arkansas fans and Memphis fans all coming together. This is what he said. I'd be open to looking at both of our schedules and potentially doing a swap of the dates of the game. And at the time, Connor, we talked about it. I said, I would be open to that idea, but I'd have to have some assurances you're going to play that game.
Right.
And I think we figured out it was very smart of Memphis not to even look into that, not to even open up that conversation, because I think the likelihood of this game being played in 2030, very, very low. Because you may have a new coach that's looking to meet incentives in his contract to make more money. And obviously, without question, they want to win as many games as possible. So I don't think this game gets played, and it was smart on the University of Memphis to not even approach that with Hunter Yurecek at the time, even though there were some people sort of going back and forth and wondering if it could be a possibility to have a full-fledged Liberty Bowl in 2026 and play that game against Arkansas.
Yeah, I think it was another good decision by the Memphis Athletic Department. They had some foresight into this, and it was a good decision. Because at the time, it felt like it would have been risky to grant it. You needed some more information. Turns out that more information, you're like, yeah, how about no?
Yep. Set the odds on that game being played in 2030 in Fayetteville.
I think John said plus 900.
He said plus 900. It may be a little overboard. I'd say about plus 450.
I'm going to say, yeah, 450.
450. I'll split the difference on sure. John. We'll see. We'll see. Memphis is not an opponent that an SEC team wants to play, but usually on the road. If you're at home, it's a little bit different, right? And I don't think losing to Memphis is some resume killer.
No,
it's not.
Anymore.
Beating them's not a resume booster by any stretch of the imagination. But obviously it depends on what the team looks like
right here.
But I just don't see Arkansas wanting to go through with that by the time we get to 2030. It just doesn't seem like a game that they would want to play, especially with potentially a new coach or two new coaches by then. I have no idea. We shall see. All right, now we talked about the Kawhi Leonard Clippers situation yesterday. Steve Ballmer invested $50 million into Aspiration. It was a tree planting company, and it became a $1.2 billion valuation. And Kawhi Leonard was a part of Aspiration, signed in, made, I think, $28 million, something like that, off of the thing. And this was Pablo Torre yesterday on his podcast sort of exposing this, saying it's subverting the salary cap because you have a max extension and then Ballmer almost directly giving money to Kawhi Leonard after the fact. Now, the Clippers put out a statement, and Connor, I want to evaluate this. Neither the Clippers nor Steve Ballmer circumvented the salary cap. The notion that Steve invested in Aspiration in order to funnel money to Kawhi Leonard is absurd. Steve invested because Aspiration's co-founders presented themselves as committed to doing right by their customers while protecting the environment. How do we feel about that statement? Complete denial, saying this was never the idea behind Kawhi getting involved. This was not to funnel money, extra money to him on top of his max extension, subverting the salary cap. This was strictly because Steve Ballmer wanted to get involved and Kawhi wanted to get involved himself as well. Like, that's the idea that you have to run with. I think the problem I have with that statement is looking at the contract detail of Kawhi Leonard with Aspiration. It said if he does not play for the Clippers, he does not make the money.
Correct.
And that's not a normal sort of fired for cause or eliminated for cause situation. The wording is tricky. I want to see what the NBA can figure out about this. They're doing a full-fledged investigation. But it feels like manipulation. It really does. And for them to completely deny it this way, it does pique my interest.
There is nothing unusual about team sponsoring. This is a very unusual deal. This is not a normal thing. Teams do not normally have a player sponsored where they don't have to show up to any events or do anything. So you're trying to sell to me that Kawhi wanted to be involved but also didn't have to do anything to help protect the environment? That's what you're trying to sell me here?
It was a no-show, and if it the contract could have been completely killed and voided if he wasn't a part of the Clippers.
It's a bold strategy.
That's not a normal out clause.
This reeks of, oh no, we may have been caught.
But here's the other part of it. A lot of lawyers that can be paid on Steve Ballmer's behalf with how much money he has. So and also Adam Silver handpicked him after the Donald Sterling situation. That was like his first move as commissioner. So I still don't know if there's going to be any hefty punishment. But at the same time, I think denying it altogether, it's very disingenuous. I'm not saying I expected anything different, but I think the things that Pablo Torre found out were very damning.
We've had conversations about when you're guilty, you say a lot of things. This feels like they're saying a lot of things. If they were completely squeaky clean, I feel like the statement would have been, neither the Clippers nor Steve Ballmer circumvented the salary cap. The notion that Steve invested in Aspiration in order to funnel money to Kawhi Leonard is absurd. End of statement. I feel like it would have been those two sentences, and then the Clippers take compliance extremely seriously. That whole middle part, though, we're investing in Kawhi's investing into protecting the environment. Also, by the way, Aspiration, they're in trouble for fraud right now, so go look at that, too. It feels like a lot of explanation.
Yes, and you know what? My dad always told me growing up, if you're explaining, you're losing.
Yes.
But again, billable hours will be there for Steve Ballmer, and maybe he'll lawyer his way out of this. But it's hard for me to look at the things that Pablo Torre found out and what we know about Kawhi when he was with the Raptors wanting $15 million extra dollars. It's hard for me to think that this was anything other than subverting the salary cap. But again, it's going to have to play out. All right, now we have NFL football tonight.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Eagles and Cowboys are going to open up our season. We have college football week two on the way. Bryce Underwood in his first real action against Oklahoma, against a ranked team. We have Kyron Samuels joining the show next to talk about all of that. Make sure you stick around. 92.9 FM ESPN. Kyron Samuels is an NFL and college football writer and analyst for Sports Illustrated, also a national scout at Clutch Sports. He's on X at Kyron Samuels, very conveniently. Ky, what's happening, man? Good to talk with you.
Happy to be back, man. Talking some football as always.
I want to talk a little bit of football and how we generally talk about it off the top here. I'm sure you've seen the generational talent conversation by now. I opened the show with it. Ryan Clark and Dano and Stephen A. Smith on First Take today. We're talking about if Arch Manning was a generational talent or not, and the argument was made he's not. And Ryan Clark took it a step further, saying Tom Brady and Peyton Manning were not generational talents. And he put John Elway, Andrew Luck in the generational talent conversation. I think the problem that I have identified is, one, we use the term generational talent too much when it comes to quarterbacks. You know, Caleb Williams got it, Trevor Lawrence got it. It's just too much. But also, number two, it feels like it's reductionist in a lot of people's minds, the way that they term generational talent. It's more having to do with athleticism, physical attributes, all of those things. What did you think about that conversation, and what do you think about that term in general?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of like misconstruing what the word generational means. That means once, I'm going to say every 25 years. That means that's the type of talent, that's the type of skill set, that's the type of well-roundedness that we don't see come along very often, once every 25 years or so. So by that definition, I don't think that there are that many generational talents, period. But let's use, you know, the guys that he brought up. Peyton Manning, absolutely a generational talent in my mind. Tom Brady, absolutely a generational talent in my mind. I think the difference is, like, just like you said, most people hear generational talent and automatically assume athleticism, size, strength, arm strength if it's a quarterback. And those are components that would help a guy earn that label, but that does not necessarily mean that you are a generational talent. I said earlier, I tweeted about it, if it was just about size, athleticism, you know, arm strength, there are far more guys that will qualify for those markers than there would be a guy that will qualify for having Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or Drew Brees, you know, mental capabilities, their processing ability, right, pre and post snap, their decision making. A guy like Tom Brady, who was always in control of the game, he knew when to check out of this play and check into another play. He knew when to call a timeout, which is a skill. He knew when to throw the ball away. He knew when to handle all those situations.
When to check into a run play, things like that. Switch right. The protection.
So those are the type of things that are also talents. Just because they're not physical and you can't outwardly see them all the time doesn't mean that those don't exist. So when you have those type of situations, that factors into it. I use another example, and I think this is something that might throw some people off. But to me, Kyler Murray is a generational talent because of some of the limitations that he had. He's a 5'9" quarterback, barely 200 pounds soaking wet. He's one of the most productive dual threat quarterbacks that we've ever seen in the game. And that is at a detriment to his size. You know what I mean? He's not, he shouldn't be here. He's an anomaly in every sense of the word, but he is supremely talented in terms of his gifts athletically, in terms of his decision-making, when to pull the ball on those zone reads, when to right. force the ball down the field. His actual arm talent and capabilities. He's a guy that was a top 10 draft pick. You know, we hear about these dual sport guys that may have got drafted in like the 15th round. He wasn't one of those guys. He was a top 10 yep. baseball draft pick. He has generational athleticism, generational talent. It just happens to be in a 5'9" frame. So I think when you frame the conversation properly, you could probably get to like what the heart of that word truly means.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's all about semantics and what you think it means. But in the end of the day, what we've learned from NFL quarterbacking over the years is the physical doesn't matter very much. It is almost all about your mental capability and your mental processing. So I don't know why we haven't adjusted how we look at physical, you know, generational talent and talent in general. We shouldn't be focusing on the physical. We've seen way too many examples of guys who just have mental capabilities and can get by that way. Tom Brady's the perfect example there. All right, now, tonight we have our opening game of the NFL season on NBC, Eagles-Cowboys, Cowboys visiting them. Cowboys have gone through a lot. Last time we talked, Micah Parsons was traded to the Packers. Eagles 8.5-point favorites, but we do know that the NFL week to week, it can be some funny business. Do you expect any funny business tonight in this game, or do you expect the Eagles to just rout them?
You know, that's an interesting conversation because I do believe that the Eagles are the supremely talented team, maybe in the entire NFL. I think they are going to be favored in any game they play. But I do think that, especially early in the season, when they're still working out a lot of new guys on defense, I think that the Cowboys can score points. I mean, you still have Dak Prescott, who's presumed to be healthy. The offensive line is probably is as healthy as it's going to be all season, early in the season. You still have CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens. They have some talent on offense that I think can keep it close. But ultimately, I think that, you know, the Eagles will find a way to pull this one out. If I had to throw like a score prediction out there, I'm going to say like 27-20, 24-20, somewhere around that area. I think it'll be a close competitive game, but one that the Eagles are mainly in control of for most of the game with that run game. Jalen Hurts, you know, selecting those shot field plays down the field. So I think it'll be a fun, entertaining, competitive ball game that the Eagles keep control of.
Yeah, one thing with the Cowboys, though, in this matchup that really concerns me is they can't run the ball. They don't really have good running backs. The offensive line is devolved. And we do know this about the Eagles secondary. They're very good. They have a lot of good players, and they have a lot of depth. And they have guys that are getting more experience by the day. Quinyon Mitchell was one of the best cornerbacks in the league, and he's got another year of experience. How much of a problem do you think that secondary could be for Dak Prescott tonight?
Well, you and I know that football is linked, right? So the secondary is talented, as you mentioned. Quinyon Mitchell, that Cooper DeJean, Reed Blankenship, they added Adoree Jackson in the offseason. They still have some young guys developing like Akili Ringo. So I think they're going to be fine in the back end. I know they lost Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, you know, to the Texans, and, you know, free agency and whatnot. But they have enough talent there. But what's going to make those guys' job even easier is that defensive line they have up front with the Eagles that are going to get after Dak Prescott. I mean, I just talked about the Cowboys offensive line, who does have – that's some talented players, right? I think they're a decent unit as well. But that Eagles front is arguably, you know, the best, you know, 1 through 8, 10, however many guys are going to rotate today. in the National Football League. So they are going to marry and help each other hand in hand. And I think the Eagles defense will, you know, force some turnovers. I think that's probably a given for those bettors out there. I would take the Eagles to get a turnover, maybe two. But again, the Cowboys offense has always been pretty much boom or bust, right? Zeke prime, where they were very, you know, stable running the ball. It's been a lot of, you know, three and out. Then you get a 80-yard drive from Dak in that offense and kind of put some points on the board. So I think the Eagles secondary will hold up. But I would, you know, assume that, you know, they are able to connect with some of those deep plays as well still.
Something I'm excited about tonight, and I'm sure you are as well, Jahad Campbell out of Alabama, their first-round pick. I've heard some good reports about him. It feels like they have another chess piece to use on the defense side of the ball, the Eagles.
Yeah, you know, I was shocked that he fell that far in the draft. I know it was purely due to some medical concerns because he was nursing a shoulder injury. But when you put on that tape, man, and I, you know, tweeted this out in 2023, I thought he was the best, you know, off-ball linebacker in the country in 2023. Then he follows it up with the All-American year last season and like a top 15 pick all season. And then, you know, banged up towards the end of the season. I just couldn't believe that the NFL as a whole let that guy fall all the way to the Eagles. And then they traded up one spot to get him. So I'm excited to see him play today. I mean, he fits perfectly for that scheme, that defense. When you look at, you know, the Eagles roster, it's full of those Alabama and Georgia guys. They love that SEC speed. Howie Roseman has talked about it ad nauseum at this point. But he loves those talented guys with that athletic ability and that acumen to go get after the ball. And that fits Jahad Campbell's mold to a T. So I'm excited to watch him play. And he doesn't have to be great right away. He has a ton of supporting help around him. And I think that's only going to help him play more freely. So, like you said, I'm very excited to watch him get after it.
So shout out PYP, our group chat. Our buddy Edge, Nick Bonito from the Broncos got paid today. 4-year extension worth up to $120 million, $70 million guaranteed. Call the family. Shout out to Nick. But I looked at that Broncos team sort of up and down, and I guess there's this thought that Bo Nix could have a sophomore slump, although I'm not betting on that. But I looked at their defensive side of the ball and just how good they are. Zach Allen, DJ Jones, Alex Singleton off injury, Dre Greenlaw. We'll see how healthy he is, but he's a former All-Pro. Nick Bonito, the Defensive Player of the Year, Pat Surtain. Talanoa Hufanga has been an All-Pro before. And then, obviously, on the offensive side of the ball, they were very successful last year with Bo Nix, and Sean Payton can dial it up. How high are the expectations in your mind for the Broncos this year? I know they play in the AFC West next to the Chiefs, but do you think they could compete for that division, knowing all you know about that roster?
Yeah, I think they're one of the more interesting teams, maybe the most interesting team to monitor the season, because I do believe in the makeup of that defense, right? Like you talked about those guys, DJ Jones is one of the more underrated interior presence in the league. One of the best players I've ever played against. So you look at what they're.
Well, I played against him too. He's damn good.
A monster of a player, right? You know, you have guys like Chris Abrams Drain, who was a fifth round draft pick last year out of Missouri, but he's really developed there. He's a guy that probably is going to see a little bit more of an increased role over Riley Moss as the season goes on. And then they drafted the All-American. I believe he won a couple of national awards as well in Jadae Barron to be kind of that, you know, jack of all trades in that secondary. So I truly believe firmly in that defense. I think they're going to be one of the better units in the National Football League over the course of the season. And even if they have some injuries, they have enough depth where they should be fine, right? I really love their makeup. Offensively, I'm a little bit concerned because I think they're going to be good, right? Sean Payton's never really fielded that bad offense. He knows how to, you know, manage games, get them in the right positions. They have Bo Nix, who's able to make some stuff happen out of structure as well, which kind of adds a different component to that offense. But they're just inconsistent, right? I mean, they started off boom or bust at the beginning of the season. And then they kind of found their rhythm, or what worked for them, but they were extremely conservative. A lot of throws at or behind the line of scrimmage, a lot of predictable things. You know, it kept them ahead of the sticks at times. They had some sustainable drives. They scored points. But it wasn't enough, right? It was never enough to really believe like they were going to beat a team on the road in the playoffs. Never enough to make you feel like they were going to beat the Chiefs when it mattered, or the Bills or the Ravens, any of those teams in the AFC. So while I do think they're going to be in that playoff range, I would give them a wild card berth at this point. I don't truly believe in that offense enough to have them win meaningful football games when it's time to win in January in the playoffs, or even if it came down to like a play-in game against another really good team. A win-and-in situation, I wouldn't believe in that offense enough because they haven't shown me anything, you know, outside of the confines of the Payton system to make me believe that they will win a shootout type of game. So I am really excited to watch to see if maybe Bo Nix does grow an extra step, or maybe his offensive line takes another step, becomes, you know, let's say the best unit in the NFL. Maybe they can take a step and score more points, but I just don't truly believe in that offense yet.
All right, talking with Kyron Samuels, at Kyron Samuels on X, national scout for Clutch Sports, also writer and analyst on NFL and college football matters for Sports Illustrated. I know you're plugged into the Alabama program. They're coming off a week one loss, first week one loss in 24 years. Kalen DeBoer's lost three of his last four. I just have to ask you, what's wrong in your mind? What is wrong with Kalen DeBoer's Alabama at this moment?
Well, that's an interesting conversation, and it's one that I feel is extremely simple. I know I tweeted this out during the game, and a lot of Alabama fans kind of came from my neck a little bit, but I just thought they were a softball team, right? To me, it wasn't as much about X's and O's. I did think that, you know, there were some things schematically on defense that they could have, you know, addressed. However, watching the tape back, I think there was a lot of really good calls by Kenny Womack that had those guys in nice position. They just, you know, got thrown off the ball up front or took a poor angle on defense or from the safety or linebacker position. Or you see a guy loafing and a play that, you know, probably should have gone for 10 or 12 yards and a nice call by Gus Malzahn ends up scoring a touchdown because guys aren't giving full effort. To me, that's not schematic. That is coaching those guys on what to do in terms of their want to. But to me, you know, I don't know how you were raised in the football world, but I assume the same thing. I was always taught that you can't coach want to. That has to be in the guy already. You can't coach effort. That has to be in the player already. And to me, I think that's a lot of what we're seeing. I think we're seeing poor fits, right? I think we have a really extremely talented roster. But I think when you look at Kalen DeBoer, when you look at Kane Wombeck, when you look at some of the other coaches, something's not translating in between because they aren't playing with school effort.
Yeah.
They aren't responding when it's time. This same thing from last season. So when you see a rollover to this season, in my opinion, that's just a poor fit. But last thing, I'll pass it right back to you. I don't like the notion that it's all on the coaches, because if you look at Jeremy Bernard, if you look at Parker Brailsford, if you look at
they play
Josh
great
Clavis,
ball.
What are all those guys have in common? All three of those guys were Washington transfers. So the toughest guys on the team, the guys that are playing the hardest, playing the best, are from their evaluation pool. They're
That's
from
a great point.
Washington that came with them. So I'm not going to sit here and say that they are able to coach that energy and effort in the players, because the best players on the field, and this goes back to last season as well, are those guys. The ones that are playing with the most consistency are either those guys or transfers like LT Overton that came into the program from their evaluation system. So I'm not going to put that on the coaches.
And Kai, I've been met with a lot of skeptics when I've brought this up, but I'm glad you bring it up this way, because I do think the type of guy that was there pre-DeBoer doesn't fit exactly what he wants to do. And there's a reason that those Washington transfers are performing the best and perform the best against Florida State. And I brought up the offensive line as an example. Caden Proctor is a good – he's a talent, right? He's a guy who could be a first-round pick in the NFL draft, but he struggled mightily. I think stylistically, we've seen a Kalen DeBoer offensive line – be great. At Washington, they were up for the Joe Moore Award, right? They were in the finalists. They were among the finalists. But it was a lot of pass protection. It was, you know, athleticism. Maybe they weren't the heaviest guys. When they ran the ball, it was more, you know, lateral movement, not vertical movement. And when you look at a guy like Caden Proctor and some of those guys up front that are holdovers from the Saban era, they're more rugged, big people movers, and I don't know if that's a stylistic fit for what Kalen DeBoer does. Do you agree with me on that?
No, I 100% agree with you there. I think there are some poor fits, right? But let's use Proctor for an example. I don't necessarily think that it's such a poor fit to where it shouldn't be successful.
Sure.
I think that's more of an internal problem with Proctor because he plays up and down to what he deems as great competition. If you put on the Georgia tape going all the way back to 2023, the 2024 Georgia tape, the 2023 LSU tape, 2024 LSU tape. He plays like a number one overall draft pick, that type of talent, that type of level. But then you put on the tape against a lesser or what would be deemed as a lesser opponent, and then he struggles. I think that maybe, and I won't put words in his mouth or assume that this is the case, but I think it follows the train that I've started to see from the last two seasons. I don't think that they thought Florida State was going to be ready to hit them in the mouth the way they did. I think they thought, you know, we're Bama. We're feeling really good. We're in year two. We're loaded up talent-wise because they are extremely loaded talent-wise. They thought they were going to go in there and just kick their butt. Florida State came in there and punched them in the mouth, and they didn't really know how to respond. And I think you saw some guys going to the shell. I think he was one of those guys. As talented as he is, it follows that train that he's playing up to competition, down to competition. So I'm really interested to see that guy specifically play over the next couple of weeks when they play Wisconsin, when they go to Georgia to play, you know, the Georgia Bulldogs. I think he's going to be up and play really well in those games. And that will kind of let me know that this isn't like a one-off, or this isn't something that I'm like, misconstruing here. I would like to see that guy play with the consistency all the time. And to me, that's something that you can't really coach into a player. That has to be in him. But like you said, I do agree that there are some poor fits in terms of personality, in terms of want to. The type of guy that DeBoer is, he needs those self-motivated internal guys. And I don't know if they all are like that. And Saban was the guy that can get the most out of anybody because he was that master motivator. I used a different example somewhere else the other day. I think Ed Orgeron would be a great fit if you gave him all this talent, right? He can get the most out of those guys. Not really an old guy, but he knew how to be the CEO. He knew how to get his guys up. They didn't really have balls on the road. They were going to play great on the road. And because the board's more of an X's and O guy, get the most out of the scheme and the talent of the player more than a motivator. So I'm interested to see how it plays out. I think they have still the full season ahead of them. We know with the 12-team playoff, everybody still has a shot. No matter if you lose week one, you probably have two losses that you can really, historically you have two losses that you can kind of play with there. So the season's still there for them, but there's a lot of uphill battle to go.
All right, last thing for Kyren Samuels at Kyren Samuels on X. I need your scouting brain for this before I let you roll. The big game this weekend, college football week two, number 15 Michigan versus number 18 Oklahoma. Michigan coming off a 34-17 win against New Mexico. But I need your scouting brain because I have watched back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Bryce Underwood, the true freshman five-star quarterback. I've watched him back about 2-3 times at this moment, and my impression of him, while there were some things that need to be improved upon, my impression was that's what it looks like. What do you think of Bryce Underwood? I know it was against New Mexico, 21 for 31, 251, one touchdown, but what did you think of Bryce Underwood's debut?
I thought he looked fantastic. I do agree with you. Like, I've seen a lot of people start comparing him to – I've seen somebody say that he looks like Cam Newton or
CJ
Stroud. I saw a couple of those comparisons. So I do think that's out of the ballpark, right? But I think he can eventually develop into a talent that we speak of. And let's see it happen first, right? He's going to go on the road to play Oklahoma. That's going to be a tough situation for a true freshman. But from what I saw, he has all the arm talent in the world. The moment didn't look too big for him. You did say that it was a New Mexico team. However, he still looked like he was ready for anything that came out.
Sure.
I love the touch that he put on the ball. I love the vertical
and
ball.
And the release as fast as possible. His release is unbelievably good. Good mechanics.
Right. He never looked rushed out there. I was really impressed with that, with his command of the huddle, how he went about checking some stuff at the line of scrimmage. So I'm really excited to watch him play, man.
For sure. All right. Well, Kai, I'll let you roll, man. We'll talk again next week.
Appreciate you.
He is Kyren Samuels at Kyren Samuels on X. Follow his work at SI, College Football and NFL. And he is a national scout at Clutch Sports. Now, we need to get into hour number two, and we're opening it up with Jeff Calkins. I need to get his lawyer hat on because we need to talk about this Kawhi Leonard Clippers situation and where this potentially ends. So we'll do that next. 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.